I try to be positive all the time. It's not because I have nothing wrong sometime in my life, but I try all the time to see the bright side. And with you, thank you. You bring me back.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO of the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. This episode features a special doctor and patient sharing their journey through osteoporosis management. Our expert is Dr. Avery Jackson III. Dr. Jackson is the Chief Executive Officer and Medical Director of Michigan Neurosurgical Institute, PC, which he founded in 2003. A board-certified neurosurgeon, Dr. Jackson has extensive training and experience in complex spinal cases, brain and spinal tumors, head and spine trauma, as well as minimally invasive procedures such as vertebroplasty and kyphoplasty to relieve pain. Dr. Jackson also participates in clinical trials of the latest neurosurgical treatments and techniques, frequently writes and speaks to medical audiences on neurosurgical topics, and holds several patents for medical inventions. Dr. Jackson serves on numerous medical boards and is a member of several associations, including the American Medical Association, American Association of Neurological Surgeons, American College of Surgeons, American Academy of Spine Surgeons, and the Michigan State Medical Society. So as you can easily tell, Dr. Jackson is an incredibly impressive physician and a very busy man. We are so honored to have him joining us today. Our second honored guest is Dr. Jackson's patient, Jocelyn, who has experienced debilitating back pain during retirement, which has impacted her ability to enjoy it fully. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into hearing more about Jocelyn's experience. Jocelyn is a woman in her early 60s who was experiencing mid-back pain for approximately 2 years. During her career, she worked as a caregiver, often lifting and transporting patients. Eventually, Jocelyn began experiencing mid-back pain.
For start, I want to say hello to everyone and a special hi to Dr. Jackson and his wonderful team. It's like a family. I love them. Yes, I have pain on my back. And you take a pill because you have to go through your day, and I get retirement. We move here, Michigan. And when you move, you want your home is nice, and you have the big box. I push one, I stay there. I was not able to do nothing else. They were so painful. I get really lucky and blessed to go see Dr. Jackson and his team.
So Jocelyn, so the pain that you had, it was really affecting your ability to walk, as I remember.
Everything.
Sleep, and even enjoying your retirement with your husband.
I would sit down on the chair 24 hours.
Oh. On exam, we found that you had severe tenderness when we percussed your back from T11 to L1 region in your back, and your MRI also confirmed that you had compression fractures at T11, T12, and L1 levels.
Dr. Jackson, can you explain to us what part of the back T11 to L1 is? Some people don't know what that means. You know, small bones that make up our spine, those bones that are called vertebrae. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. You have the thoracic and then the lumbar levels. And so at the T11 level and T12, L1 level, that's basically the bottom of your rib cage. So your bottom rib is T12. And so we were working right around that rib cage, bottom of the rib cage area on Jocelyn's back. That's where the fractures were formed.
Oh, God, I was feel really good. And finally, I was able to adopt a dog because I love dog, and she was wonderful. We was going to walk 3 times a day and beautiful. Finally, she gets scared and she pulled me. And I had, big pain again. Fortunately for me, I had to go to the doctor for he check how is my back. when they said to me, and I'm pretty sure, and I said them what happened, and she said, oh, probably another time.
And then after walking the dog and you found the fracture at L2, Jocelyn underwent a second kyphoplasty very successfully.
Yeah, and this is so wonderful. It's short time. You don't have to go to the hospital for days, and very good. Monday, I did the paint my ceiling. Can you imagine? Before, I was not able to do it. Forget it. I was not able to bend. I have osteoporosis, pretty advanced. And thank you, doctor. You bring me right back under my life. You take me under your wing, and now it's perfect.
Oh, well, I'll say, Jocelyn, you know, you're an excellent patient and you have a can-do attitude. In other words, you're not expecting failure, okay? You have a great attitude, and I think that your attitude also played in your recovery.
Oh, man, what I can say, and I try to be positive all the time, it's not because I have nothing wrong sometime in my life, but I try all the time to see the bright side. And with you, thank you. You bring me back.
One other point I'll say, though, is that so with a smoking history and with age, it's, you know, having one fracture and then subsequent fractures or more fractures after the first, you know, is more likely. And I think by you having that good attitude, you've changed a lot of your diet and lifestyle. And that's also given you a lot of success. One of the points I want to point out, though, is that there have been studies that have shown that you can have a fracture near where surgery was done, but you can also have a fracture that's not near where surgery was done based on the overall bone quality of your spine in general.
Osteoporosis is pretty bad. Sneaky is eat your bone. This is put you on the bad journey. Then lady and my gentleman have some, don't wait for consult. Please don't wait. This will be avoid for you a lot of the pain. And thank you, Dr. Johannes.
You're welcome. It's my honor.
Jocelyn, your story is so remarkable for a number of reasons. And one of those is that, as Dr. Jackson points out, your attitude and willingness to make changes to the way that you live your life to improve your spine health. And also this notion that it's not always a one and done kind of approach to treatment, that it can take a few experiences of having a little bit of a setback and taking a step forward. It's an ongoing management. I think for you, particularly with the osteoporosis, that presents another level of complication. You point out it's a sneaky disease and it's a silent disease.
I didn't know I have it. My doctor and his team discovered that, and they said to me, if you don't take care, this will happen again.
I was hoping that Dr. Jackson could tell us a little bit about osteoporosis and his experiences in treating patients who have these abnormalities in the spine and the pain that they get with that.
So in terms of what osteoporosis is, I would say that, you know, it's loss of bone strength and bone quality, or there's a slow increase, very slow or decreased speed at which your bone gets stronger. And one of the best definitions is on the National Osteoporosis Foundation website. There's just a very clear examples of what osteoporosis is. There's even a model of it. So please, if you can, take a look at the National Osteoporosis Foundation website regarding that. And so some of the bigger causes of osteoporosis would be with menopause and change in hormones, we can see that our bone quality will decrease and change. But there's also lifestyle factors such as smoking or excessive alcohol use or even caffeinated foods. And so with this osteoporosis, one can go and just literally fall from standing height and develop a fracture of the hip or spine or even wrist. And most of us, even some years ago, early on in my thinking, before I really engaged National Osteoporosis Foundation and ultimately became an ambassador, was that, well, when a person's older, they're going to fall. And when they fall, they're going to break their hip or their wrist or their spine. And that's just a natural part of life. But in fact, now we realize that osteoporosis is completely preventable, and that when a person does break their hip or their wrist or their spine, and they have a fall from standing height, and they're older than that 50 or 60 year range, it's because there's a derangement in the quality and strength, the bone mass that they have. And it's a whole skeleton disease. So there are many different treatments. And I would say one of the first is going to be your prevention. And this really can occur as early as childhood. There have been longitudinal studies looking at children who play and are, you know, run outside and they're very active.
Dr. Jackson, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you tell us what a longitudinal study is?
I'm sorry. So a study over a long time period looking at specific people or specific groups. So there have been, in this particular study, looking at children who are active outside and they're running and they're jumping and they're, you know, they're strengthening their bones when they're younger. And so those people, those children that become adults, tend to have better bone strength than children who don't run around and jump and create stronger bones. And so that's an important piece. Also, lifestyle, as I mentioned earlier, is very important in the prevention of this osteoporosis, including diet. In America, in general, most of us don't have the greatest diets. And so we find that we have to supplement our diet with calcium and vitamin D to really improve our overall bone strength and bone quality and bone health, if you will. And there are many food substances that are very rich in calcium and vitamin D, like, for instance, leafy green vegetables and broccoli, for instance. And so those are also important pieces to prevent the osteoporosis. And then when it comes to treatment options and kind of how to diagnose osteoporosis, so the diagnosis side really has to do with oftentimes someone presents with pain, either in their spine or you have pain in your hip or your wrist. And so imaging studies will be obtained. So usually you'll get an x-ray, go on to get an MRI of the spine, or even a bone scan. And that's just kind of a nuclear medicine study that looks for these fractures. And so from there, once you have that diagnosis of osteoporosis, because you have these imaging findings, you're symptomatic, then one of these specific imaging findings looks at your bone density, how dense or how light versus how dense and strong is your bone. And those parameters, imaging studies, your clinical presentation, as well as your bone density, will let us know whether you have osteoporosis. Well, those people who have osteoporosis are more likely to go on to develop these fractures, as I mentioned, of the spine or the hip or the wrist. And so we want to try to prevent you ever having to be in that category. But once you are in that category, you have these fractures, you know, now what do you do? Okay, so we talked about changing the lifestyle, and there are medications that can be used that can also strengthen and improve osteoporosis. One type of medication that can be used is a medication that literally helps to rebuild bone. And we call that an anabolic medication. And so that medication can be very helpful in rebuilding bone along with the other treatments, which is going to be your lifestyle change. You know, you're going to put down the caffeine, you're going to decrease how much alcohol intake you have. You're going to work on your exercise in terms of your lifestyle, and then the calcium and vitamin D supplements. And so those are kind of non-surgical ways of treating an osteoporotic fracture in general. And then, of course, you know, for hip fractures, we have hip surgery. For the compression fractures of the spine, we have vertebral augmentation. There's also physical therapy and to some bracing. And with vertebral augmentation, what that simply means is that there's a minimally invasive way where we can place a needle that goes into the spine, into the back of the spine, into the bone, and then a balloon goes through that needle or another device, and you're able to expand that device, and that can help to unsquash the squashed bone that's in the vertebrae in your spine. And then you can place liquid cement in that same area, and that will harden. And when that hardens, that can really stop the pain, like, right away. I mean, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Is that the procedure that you had, Jocelyn? Yeah. And Dr. Jackson, that type of procedure that you describe as minimally invasive, that sounds like it's something that doesn't require lengthy hospital stay. What does a patient experience when they have that type of procedure? Is it done in an operating room or in a clinic setting, or how's that done?
Yeah, so, and you're absolutely right when you mention lengthy hospital stay. There was a study that by Dr. Chang looking at hospital stay with this procedure and without. And in that study, his particular study, they found that with this procedure, when it's either done in the hospital or now even in the office setting, so oftentimes in the office setting, people will tend to be discharged sooner than when they're in the hospital and they have the non-procedural treatment options. But in general, this procedure can be done both in the office setting or in the hospital setting.
That's interesting. Dr. Jackson, we love hearing about prevention of osteoporosis and treatment of osteoporosis. Thank you for explaining that to us so clearly. I think one thing that people often forget is that bone is a living tissue. So bone is constantly being used and remade by the body. And there are things that can alter the rate of that creation of new bone cells and destruction of old bone cells. And osteoporosis literally means porous bones. And so I think it's interesting for people to learn that there are things that they can do to help those cells that are making new bone. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Sure. And you're right on, you know, Dr. Rita, it's really amazing how alive, if you will, your bones are. And I really appreciate you pointing that out. That will give people a better reference point of what's really occurring. And so we have basically three types of cells in all of the bones in our bodies. We have osteoblasts, which are like bricklayers that these cells, they lay bone down. And that's what makes bones stronger and makes bones grow to some degree. We have osteoclasts, which are like Pac-Men that kind of chomp and eat the bone up. That helps with bone turnover. And then osteocytes, which are like retired bricklayers that help to build the foundation of the bone. And their job is just they add to kind of the density. So with these three cell populations that are occurring in your bone, they're always working. Okay, one's laying bone down, one is eating the bone up. And so they're in this kind of state of equilibrium. So, you know, they're, you know, somewhere between solid bone based on how much the osteoblasts, the bricklayers are working and how much the Pac-Men or the osteoclasts are working. So you can alter, if you will, this relationship between the activity of one laying bone down and one eating the bone up, based on your lifestyle, based on certain drugs that we take. For instance, I know that sometimes we need to take steroids for certain conditions. Well, steroids over time are going to decrease the activity of the bricklayer, if you will, and the Pac-Man is going to kind of take over in their activity, right? And so your bones are going to get weaker. Likewise with smoking. And so this dynamic process occurs throughout our entire lives. Even when we look at exercise, exercise actually upregulates or increases the activity of your bricklayers and gives you stronger bone. So it's a very dynamic process in how that works. And so the recommendations by the National Osteoporosis Foundation, which are founded in solid science and observation based on what we've just discussed, really do a good job at explaining this process, again, at their website, the National Osteoporosis Foundation website. And so on there, not only do we talk about those specifics and how that process works, but also why having that good diet and the calcium and the vitamin D are important to make sure that your bricklayers are doing what they're supposed to do and that we kind of modify or regulate what those Pac-Men do. Even though those Pac-Men, if you will, the osteoclasts do play a role in helping to form new bones. So it's not like we can just get rid of them altogether, but it's just making sure that balance is just right so that at the end of the day, you have a strong bone and a strong skeleton.
That's so wonderfully explained. You paint a picture of a vibrant process. that goes on throughout life. And we have enjoyed a collaboration with the National Osteoporosis Foundation. And one of the things that we've been really excited to collaborate on is the idea of bone health and the spine, and that it's never too early to start thinking about bone health. It's interesting to hear that bone health starts in childhood and continues throughout. And I guess just sort of a last question regarding patients with back pain who come to see you. When you are meeting patients like Jocelyn and others like her, before you figure out an approach to treating her pain, how often or where in that process does the idea of osteoporosis come into the clinical, you know, sort of clinical decision making for how to treat a patient? Where, how often is it? How prevalent does that come up? As a doctor, you see people come in. Does osteoporosis come up in the top of your mind? How does it present to you?
I'm so glad that you asked that question, because there is a fairly large knowledge gap that we're experiencing across the country in making the diagnosis of osteoporosis and also an osteoporotic fracture or other complications due to osteoporosis. And so, you know, part of that has to do with the educational piece. And, you know, your program is obviously a huge component in shrinking that gap, because, you know, by educating the patients and their families and the clinicians and physicians, you're bringing this concept of osteoporosis to the forefront and putting that on our minds as we're seeing our patients. So thank you for that. And in general, for me, it's every person over the age of 50, I'm going to automatically start thinking about their bone health. And so with that, we have a series of questions in that we ask patients, and we have a bone health clinic or a fracture intervention clinic. It was originally called the Fracture Liaison Service, actually. And in that clinic, we were trained by the National Osteoporosis Foundation to look for specific cues in terms of their age, in terms of whether a person's smoking and other specific risk factors for osteoporosis, and then going on to examine them. So there are certain exam findings that we look at, because we know that if they have poor balance, there is a chance that they can go on to fall and then break a bone in their body. We look at the prevention side during our clinics. And then lastly, we look at the x-rays, the MRIs, the bone scan study we mentioned earlier, and the bone density studies in the laboratory results. And so all of that together will give us a good idea of who needs this prevention or who needs the actual procedure. So my office in particular, we're very vigilant that anyone over the age of 50 is going to go through this process. And so we're kind of acutely aware. Also, we're spending time educating clinicians and physicians, not only in our local area, but from around the world, on our bone health project ECHO. And that, just in a nutshell, is just leveraging technology to have these discussions about cases and talk like we're talking, so that we can make sure that all the treating physicians and clinicians can think about osteoporosis early on in their decision-making process as they're seeing patients, and being very aggressive to strengthen their bones and make sure their bones are healthy before they go on to develop osteoporosis and or before they go on to develop a fracture due to osteoporosis.
This is such an important topic, particularly with an aging population and an aging population that is more active than ever before. Bone health, definitely something that we need to talk more about. And we are so delighted to be collaborating with the National Osteoporosis Foundation in bringing this educational information to the forefront, because a lot of times people don't think that their backbones can become osteoporotic or that calcium and vitamin D have anything to do with your back or back pain. Dr. Jackson and Jocelyn, I am so incredibly grateful to both of you for being here with us today. We've covered a huge topic, osteoporosis, distilled it down into smaller pieces that we can understand through the gift of Dr. Jackson's ability to teach us that, and through Jocelyn's generosity in sharing her story. We know that there are just invaluable benefits that come from hearing from a doctor and their patient. We truly, truly appreciate you sharing your story. Congratulations to you, Jocelyn. Number one, finding a great doctor and his team.
Last question I wanted to ask for Doctor, you talk about the kids. They move a lot than me, believe me. I know that. Can the osteoporosis be hereditary? Like my daughter can have it more chance to have it than somebody never have it?
So, you know, and that's a good point. So your question just related around whether there is either a genetic component or does osteoporosis occur in with a family history of osteoporosis from family member to family member. And that's a really good question because there are some basic genetics that can play a role, but there's also epigenetics now. And with epigenetics, that's basically looking at gene expression. So we can alter the proteins that make genes and make organs, we can influence how those genes express the signals that they need to express. And I believe that within that space, based on your lifestyle and how you're brought up, home environment, the environment itself plays a role and can dictate what happens to you later in life. So for instance, if I was taught as a child not to drink milk, and in my home, say that we didn't really eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, so I have a deficit of calcium and vitamin D because I was kind of brought up that way on foods that aren't rich in those, then that's one epigenetic way that I can go on to develop osteoporosis. So if my parents function that way in terms of the foods that they like to eat, they develop osteoporosis, and then as I grow up, then I have kind of a similar pattern, then I can develop osteoporosis. So that's a piece that I don't want to miss because oftentimes in some of our research, we look at the data and the assumption is it's just purely genetic without any involvement or decision made by the person who has the osteoporosis or their family. So it's a bit more dynamic.
Jocelyn, at the National Spine Health Foundation, we call people like you spinal champions. People who have benefited from spinal treatments and have overcome their challenge and have been able to get back to the things and people that they love. And I'm so happy to hear that you will continue to be able to play with your grandchildren for time to come. And Dr. Jackson, thank you so very much for your generous time today and for creating spinal champions out there. We really, really are honored and appreciate having you with us today. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or lower back pain each year. To hear more stories of success and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening. The information and views expressed in the Get Back to It podcast are intended for informational purposes and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice or to replace the services of trained healthcare providers. To view the National Spine Health Foundation's full disclaimer, visit spinehealth.org.